So, good evening. It is Tuesday, May 24th, 2011. Who's in the Talmud? We're doing Rav Yochanan today, part one. Last time we did this, we concluded with Rav Yehuda HaNasi. So, even though Rav technically might come earlier, I figure it might make sense to stick in the Eretz Yisrael zone and the Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael before we go to the Amorai Bavel.
Okay.
And we're going to see some sources here about how Rav Yochanan is actually a contemporary of Rav and Shmuel, perhaps like came a generation or half a generation later. All right, so you know we're not necessarily going to be we're still going to try to keep up some chronology. Just we're going to focus on Eretz Yisrael first before we get to Babel. All right. So first off, with Rav Yochanan, we're talking about the famous Rav Yochanan, the one who's mentioned without patronymic is the fancy term way of saying it, but he's occasionally referred to as Bar Nafta, i.e. the son of a blacksmith, lived in Israel, died 279 approximately, and he's mentioned really thousands of times in rabbinic literature. With Rav Yochanan, Dr. Elman had a theory. Dr. Elman of Yaakov Elman of Yeshiva University had a theory that he shared with us in class, that in the Bavli, Rav Yochanan is sometimes used as a means for attributing some source that came out of Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, in the Yushalmi, something could be mentioned one way. Not infrequently, you'd find the Bavli citing of the name of Rav Yochanan, because he's considered to really be the quintessential Eretz Yisrael Amora. I should have included this on the list, but it's attributed to him that he compiled the Talmud Yerushalmi, even though that's more than likely not true. He does get that attribution. And I think that's more due to his status of being really one of the big religious leaders out of Eretz Yisrael, or at least the one recognized enough in Bavel that Bavel would say, oh, sure, it's probably from Rav Yochanan type thing. But it is one of these areas where he can be easily confused, not just between Eretz Yisrael sources, but sometimes confused with similar sounding people. For example, Rav Yonatan. One of the things Dr. Elman did a paper on was, in the Bavli, we have frequently an Ika de Amre, which usually means, or another way of saying this, and you have Ika de Amres of saying, well, he said this, or some say someone else said it. And he went through all the Ika de Amres that involved changing attribution, and he found that most of that the mistakes were either relationships in terms of you confused a teacher and a student, or you confused two chavrutas, or the names sounded the same, like Yonatan and Yochanan. Right? When you're dealing with an oral tradition, it kind of makes sense. But it does make things... It's a good test case, I should say, as to why it can be difficult to try to parse out the rabbinic bibliography because even in the Gemara itself, we're not entirely sure who said what. Because you could have speculation, even just within the Talmud Bavli alone, within one sugya, let alone comparing to your Shalmis. But at any rate, we're going to do the best we can with what we got. Tracy, start us off with Kedushin 31b.
Okay, I'm going to try and... Hebrew slash Aramaic.
Sure.
So
Tracy was just about to do our first source here. We just did a very quick summary of Rav Yochanan in a general sense. Today we're going to discuss some very interesting tidbits about Rav Yochanan's life based on the Gemara. So source number one is Kedushin 31b.
Amar Rav Yochanan, Ashrei mi shelo chaman. So Rav Yochanan said, happy is he who has not seen them. And in parentheses, it's translated as them being his parents, for the obligation of honoring them is so great. Rav Yochanan, ki avrato imo met aviv, yaldato meta imo. So Rav Yochanan's father died when his mother gave birth to him.
Conceived him,
awkward. And his mother died when she bore him.
Yeah.
That's... Okay. But we're supposed to be happy for that.
It's worth talking about it here. All right, so from a purely biographical perspective, what we see from this Gemara is that he never knew his parents. Again, assuming that we're taking this at face value historical fact, but at least it's a tradition of Rav Yochanan. So he didn't know his parents. Now, pointing out on the obvious thing here, he's happy that he didn't know his parents. In the context of the Gemara, talking about kibud av ve'em, and if you say that kibud av ve'em, honoring your parents is so great, what I believe Rabbi Yochanan is saying in this Gemara is, like, putting in so much effort to understand what it is you have to do and the extent that you need to on your parents, it's easier for you if you never knew them. So he never knew his parents, so he never had that really high level of obligation. You could also, if you want to try to get inside his head, right, maybe it's just his way of compensating, you know, and sort of losing himself in the halachot. It depends how much emotion you wish to ascribe to the statement here.
Yeah.
You could say that, maybe he threw himself into the laws of kibud av ve'em, of honoring his parents, and realized, like, wow, there was no way I can do this. You know what? I'm better off. Which is, it's still a very strange statement to make.
It only makes sense in the way I read it initially, is if you read it as, that you haven't seen your parents, not ever, but like you haven't seen them in a while. Meaning now at this point in your life you're married and they live in different towns, so you don't have to deal with the kibud av ve'em commandments daily.
Oh, but you still do.
Okay, but there's much more you have to do when you're in their house, when you see them in person, in terms of how you treat them and how you talk to them and where you sit and all that stuff. So if you don't see them, like I don't believe that according to Jewish law we would hold that like someone who hasn't ever had parents is better off because there's so much they're supposed to teach you and the whole family life is so integral. Like, I don't really believe that's you're actually happy about that.
Or, okay.
I don't know.
Any thoughts on that? All right.
Do we know who brought up Rav Yochanan?
Do we know who brought up Rav Yochanan? Yeah, there are various sources to that, which I didn't include in this one because it's just trying to. Well, I shouldn't say do we know. There are sources that say about, you know, where he, yeah, where he grew up. Shimon, take source number 2. This is Gemara Yoma 82b.
There was a woman with child who had smelled a dish.
On Yom Kippur. The Mishnah in Yoma this is Gemara Yoma 82b. Mishnah in Yoma that's on the previous page, 82a, cites that if a woman is pregnant, translate here, ubara sheharicha, that if a pregnant woman smelled food or drink on Yom Kippur, ma'achilin ota ad shetashif nafsha, then you're allowed to feed her until she feels a certain degree of relief.
Oh, get out of here.
That's what the Mishnah says.
Oh, so
case by case basis. Finish off the Gemara here. I'm just saying that's what the Mishnah says. Mishnah to Halacha is whole.
Well, you pass through the whole thing.
Finish off the Gemara.
People came before Rabbi, questioning him what should be done. He said to them, "Go and whisper to her that it is the Day of Atonement." They whispered to her, and she accepted the whispered suggestion. Whereupon he, the rabbi, cited about her the verse, "Before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee." From her came forth Rav Yochanan.
Yeah. So the case here, I mean, this is, again, if we put the Gemara in Yoma 82b and Kedushin 31b together, this is the woman who died while giving birth to Rav Yochanan, but while she was pregnant with, ostensibly Rav Yochanan, on Yom Kippur, the question was raised before Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, and he said, remind her that it's Yom Kippur, and that worked enough for her. And the Gemara discusses about, even based on the Mishnah, you say you could, there seems to be a very clear ethic, don't do it, right? Or at least there's some sense of righteousness for not doing it. For anyone listening here, this is in no way a psak at all about pregnant women fasting. As I say regarding all of this, do not ask a rabbi, ask a medical professional first and foremost, then talk to your rabbi. Slight digression there, but important to throw that. Anyway, it does show, though, that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi came the generation before. Right, as well. So this puts him in some context as well. Yeah. Another interesting story about Rav Yochanan coming into the world. Gemara in Brachot 20a is one of the many sources you find in the Gemara that discuss Rav Yochanan's beauty. More than, I think, most, if not all, of the Tanaim and Omoraim, Rav Yochanan is recalled as being unusually attractive. objectively. So here's one. Here's the Gemara in Bracha 20a. If Yochanan was accustomed to go and sit at the gates of the bathing place, he said, "When the daughters of Israel come up from bathing, they look at me, and they have children as handsome as I am." Said the rabbis to him, "Is not the master afraid of the evil eye?" He replied, "I come from the seed of Joseph, over whom the evil eye has no power. As it is written, Joseph is a fruitful vine above the eye." Rabbi Abahu said, "Regard this, do not read Ale Ayin, but rather Ole Ayin," referring to the evil eye. Again, there are a whole lot of sources, and we'll actually see a couple of others, especially when we get to Reish Lakish. But Rav Yochanan was known for being pretty good looking, which, you know, is on one hand, I think, you know, interesting that an Amora would have that physical characteristic recorded and recorded probably, you know, kind of frequently in the Gemara, because you normally say Sheker Achim V'Hefel HaYofi, oh, you know, we shouldn't look at the superficial stuff, but it is in fact recorded in the Gemara that he was good looking. You know, not in the sense of it's a positive, you know, character trait, but rather it happened to have been a fact. He was good looking.
Maybe you need to say that about someone who has no parents in terms of trying to marry them off. Like, well, we don't know their lineage, their parents are dead, but he's a really good looking guy.
That's, we're going to see that actually with Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, not this week though. That's a great point.
Yosef HaSadiq, and Yosef HaSadiq was really good looking, right?
That's a great point. I didn't think of that. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, I like that.
That's nice. You can't get evil eye coming from Yosef HaSadiq, so that's good.
Not from Yosef too, but it also, it makes perfect sense. Awesome. Also, kind of interesting how he would know this, considering that he wasn't raised by his parents.
How he would know what?
Well, that he comes from Yosef.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they knew who birthed him, it's just he didn't get to know them.
Yeah, good point, I suppose.
Right?
Well, that is true, because he's called Rav Yochanan Bar Nachla, son of the blacksmith, so how would they know he's a blacksmith? It's like, oh yeah, your dad was a blacksmith. Doesn't help so much. Anyway, next we move on to Gemara in Tanit 21a. Somewhat of an extended citation here, but it has, I think, a very interesting story about Rav Yochanan and a colleague of his. Go for it, Tracy.
Dolfa and Rav Yochanan studied together the Torah, and they found themselves in great want. And they said to one another, "Let us go and engage in commerce, that one of us may be fulfilled the verse, howbeit there shall be no need among you."
Yeah, so like many people, studying Torah doesn't pay that well. So, and their response was, "Efes ki lo yavecha avyon." Worthwhile saying here that their response to, "Hey, we shouldn't be poor, what should we do? Get jobs." Shocking! Yeah.
They went and sat down under a ruinous wall, and while they were having their meal, two ministering angels came. And Rav Yochanan overheard one saying to the other, "Let us throw this wall upon these people and kill them, because they forsake life eternal and occupy themselves with temporal." The other angel replied, "Leave them alone, because one of them has still much to achieve." Rav Yochanan heard this, but Ilfa did not. Whereupon Rav Yochanan said to Ilfa, "Master, have you heard anything?" He replied, "No." Thereupon, Rav Yochanan said to himself, "Seeing that I heard this and Ilfa has not, it is evidence that I am the one who still has much to achieve." Rav Yochanan then said to Ilfa, "I will go back, that of me may be fulfilled, for the poor shall never cease out of the land."
Yeah, so stop there. I mean, it's a pasuk I said before that, let's say, "Kilo yachdal avyon mikarav haaretz." So, in a sense, I mean, they were poor, and one thing is like, oh, we should go so that we should get rid of poverty, and so Rav Yochanan heard this dialogue, or I shouldn't say dialogue, an argument between two Malachi Hasharit, two angels, which is fascinating in its own right, and then he says, well, the Pasuk also says the poor's not going to cease from their land, so I'm going to take it upon myself to be poor, and fulfill that verse. Okay? Continue.
Thereupon, Rav Yochanan went back, but Ilfa did not. When at last Ilfa returned, Rav Yochanan was already presiding over the school, and the scholars said to him, "Had you remained here and studied the Torah, you might have been presiding." Ilfa then suspended himself from the mast of a ship and exclaimed, "There's anyone who will ask me a question from the baraitot of Rav Chia and Rav Hoshaya, and I fail to elucidate it from the Mishnah, then I will throw myself down and be drowned in the sea." An old man came forward and cited the following baraita: "If a man, in his last will and testament, declares, 'Give a shekel weekly to my sons,' but actually they need a selah
Forget the sixth. That's a
okay. A sella.
Yeah.
Then they shall be given a sella. But if he declared, give them a shekel only, and then they should be given a shekel. If, however, he declared, on their death, others should inherit their allowance in their stead, then whether he has declared give or give only, they are given a shekel only. He replied, this is in accordance with the view of Rav Meir, who said, it is a duty to carry out the will of a dying man.
Right, so it's somewhat anticlimactic, you know, towards the end. And there are a whole lot of questions you can ask about Ilfa, like suspending him up and wanting to drown himself because he had the gall to go and earn a living. This is a fairly rich agadic passage here. Any thoughts on this that strikes anyone here?
I mean, between this and the one before,
yeah.
Whoever chose to include these particular stories about Yochanan in the Gemara, like, they don't exactly portray him as humble, which is another trait.
Really?
It seems to be, I mean, my impression, the first one he says, yeah, I'm good looking, and the second one we just read in Tani, he's like, yeah, it's probably me that's going to achieve great things. I should be the Talmud Chacham. I should stay and study. Not to a conceited degree necessarily, but he definitely... I wouldn't say he's full of himself, but he's definitely like confident, and that's not necessarily something that's like portrayed or that we portray as a positive character trait in
right. Well,
rabbis or whatever.
Understand? Okay. Perhaps to phrase it a little more gently, you can say that he was certainly aware of his abilities. Or at least aware. I mean, look, most people I know who are good looking know they're good looking.
But this is him and his study partner.
Right.
And there's two malachim that say one of you is going to be great. And he's like, oh, it must be me. Just because, I mean, I know he justifies it as saying Ilfa didn't hear.
Right.
But I think there's a little bit of a confusion there. But I mean, it also seems to be said from the point of the Gemara, from a place of respect. Like, he was a great man, and yeah, he knew it, but that's cool because he's great.
And it wasn't that Ilfa was a slouch either.
Right.
I mean, the conclusion of the story is he gets up and lays down this challenge. And you know, he can still hold his own. Any thoughts, Shimon?
Same thoughts.
It is a very rich agada here. But it's worthwhile to keep in mind. But I certainly find it interesting in terms of the description of Rav Yochanan's own growth and, you know, how he went off to where he was. And, you know, he thought about earning a living. And then when he heard the Malachim say, you know, well, he still has much to accomplish, he says, you know what? It's okay that I be poor because what I do, is going to be that much, you know, it is going to be that significant. Of course, I mean, something to keep in mind here, when reading agadic statements like this, and we've had similar analogies before, is who would know to record this? And you're talking about a private exchange between Rav Yochanan and Ilfa. And, you know, considering that Rav Yochanan was the only one who was able to hear these Malachi Ashari, unless it's Rav Yochanan himself that's retelling the story, how would people know? You know, from a historical standpoint, unless like they were eavesdropping and Ilfa couldn't hear the Malachim, how would other people? Which is why I would sooner think that this is, for lack of a better term, an embellishment rather than actual history, you know, for certain things like this. But it is useful in terms of either teaching a moral lesson about what does it mean to learn, what does it mean to sacrifice, should one give up learning, is it appropriate to give up learning to earn a living, a whole lot of things that you could read into this from a moral standpoint, or could be talking about the greatness of Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan was, A, great enough to hear a malach. He was great enough to say, you know what, I'm going to be poor and achieve whatever it is that I need to achieve. So many different ways you can read this. I just wouldn't necessarily take this at face value, lahalacha. I mean, well, obviously it's not lahalacha, but I wouldn't take this face value as history. All right? Okay, we've got another... not too long. Shimon, take Gemara Chulin 95b. Oh, I apologize, I should fix these up. Where it says Rav, it really means Rav. The Cincino translation, which I used for this, reads it as Rav, so it should really be Rav. But go ahead.
Rav used...
Gemara Chulin 95b. Yeah. Just make sure we get that.
Rav used to regard a fireboard as a sign. Shmuel, a passage in book... And Rav Yochanan, a verse quoted by a child.
By a child. So what that means is, what it means a sign is, people with, Rav, Shmuel, and Rav Yochanan saw omens through different things in the world. So with Rav Yochanan, it was a verse quoted by a child, which you find very frequently in the Gemara. And you'll see a case here of where that happens.
During the lifetime of Rav Yochanan.
Of Rav Yochanan. Right, Rav, comma. Oh. Rav Yochanan used Rav to address him thus in letters.
And thus in letters. All right. Greetings to our master in Babylon. After Rav's death, Rav Yochanan used to address Shmuel thus. Greetings for a colleague in Babylon, said Shmuel to himself. Is there nothing in which I am his master?
Because he called Rav master, but to Shmuel he called my colleague. He said, in the Hebrew it's Rabbeinu Shebabavel, but for Shmuel he said Chavireinu Shebabavel.
Shmuel Hanavi?
No, not Shmuel Hanavi. This is Shmuel the Amora, that was a contemporary of Rav. Right, so according to here, he's making himself subordinate to Rav, but on the same level as Shmuel. All right, so Shmuel says, but wait, is there nothing in which I am his master? So he, Shmuel,
thereupon sent to Rav Yochanan the calculations for the intercalculation of months for 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
Said Rav Yochanan, he only knows mere calculations. So he, Shmuel, wrote out and sent Rav Yochanan 13 camel loads of questions concerning doubtful cases of trefa?
Trefa, yeah.
Oh, trefa?
Yeah. Non-kosher food, or non-kosher, well. Questions of trefa referring to questionable shechitas, but you know that area.
Said Rav Yochanan, it is clear that I have a master in Babylon. I must go and see him. So he said to a child, tell me the last verse you have learned. He answered, now Shmuel was dead.
That refers to Shmuel Hanavi. Meaning he's quoting a verse from Shmuel about, oh, Shmuel died. So, continue.
Said Rav Yochanan, this means that Shmuel has died. But it was not the case. Shmuel was not dead then. And this happened only that Rav Yochanan did not trouble
himself. So what you have here is, you know, this is, I think when we covered this once in another context, you know, you've got a Babylonian source that is placing its great rabbis of Rav and Shmuel at the end on a higher level than Rav Yochanan, which is interesting in its own right. Following the pshat of this agada, I mean, just what the words are saying, he calls Rav Rabbeinu, my master, our master, and Shmuel Chavireinu. Shmuel comes off as a little bit indignant at that. It's like, what do you mean? Am I not your master too? And then sends him a whole bunch of data. Rav Yochanan says, he can do math. So then Shmuel sent over a whole lot of other, you know, pieces of halacha, such that Rav Yochanan said, hey, wait, this guy really knows his stuff, so I have to go see him, which seems to imply that he had never met Shmuel before. And going back on that introductory line of, since he used verses that children taught as a siman, as a sign, he asked the child, what verse did you learn today? And he said, Shmuel died. So given that he taught that, he took that as a serious omen, he said, so it must be that Shmuel died. And the Gemara concludes, well, he wasn't really dead, but the only reason why he got this sign was because, I guess, you know, God didn't want him to trouble himself by traveling all the way to Babel from Eretz Israel. Yeah.
Wait, after all the Navis, right?
Yeah.
Crazy people and children could prophesize, right?
Yeah.
So wait, so Shmuel Hanavi was passed away already?
Or? Right, so Shmuel Hanavi passed away centuries before this.
Oh, he did? Right. Was he the last Navi?
No. Shmuel Hanavi was not the last Navi, but the pasuk who Shmuel made is actually a pasuk in Shmuel. So when the child tells him Shmuel died, even though the verse he was citing referred to Shmuel Hanavi, Rav Yochanan took that not as nevuah, as what we would call typical prophecy, but he would call them simanim. He would consider that as a sign or some sort of omen that something would happen. Consider it
To the other Shmuel.
Exactly.
I get it. All right. Sorry.
That's fine. That's what I'm here to explain this stuff for.
Where did you see from the story that the Bavli here is regarding Shmuel and Rav is kind of higher than...
So according to this narrative, so right off the bat, Rav Yochanan calls Rav Rabbeinu, right? Which would put him on a higher level than himself.
But that's...
And then he gets in the dialogue with Shmuel that also puts Shmuel over Rav Yochanan.
I mean, I kind of read it as, it's not... I mean, they were contemporaries. For whatever reason, Rav Yochanan either had learned with Rav or respected him to the point that he calls him Ravenu. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that the Gemara is saying that there he's higher. It's more of a relative thing between Rav. I read it as more of a relative thing between Rav and Shmuel, right? Where he, for whatever reason, he's Ravenu and as opposed to Chavirenu.
Okay.
I don't know. But
perhaps.
I don't know.
Okay. Nice. So we move on to Gemara in Chulin 147b. Rav Yochanan then inquired, "Who is the head of the academy in Babylon, Babel?" So Abba Arika, which is a reference to being tall, according to one interpretation, he replied. "And you simply call him Abba Arika?" said Rav Yochanan. "I remember when I was sitting before Rebbe," meaning referring to Rav Yehuda Hanasi, 17 rows behind Rav, meaning the fact that he was 17 rows behind Rav shows the level of, you know, if you could somehow quantify in terms of the greatness or superiority, the closer up you were, the greater you were. So he was 17 rows behind Rav, seeing sparks of fire leaping from the mouth of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi into the mouth of Rav, and from the mouth of Rav into the mouth of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. And I could not understand what they were saying, and he simply saw him, Abba Rika? So this kind of helps put in a little bit of context in terms of why did he have such reverence for Rav. And the truth is they went back to the school days when they were together, and you know, yes, whether or not they were, you know, literally spitting fire, you could easily call this as a homily, a poetic exaggeration. I don't know if anyone here remembers, you know, being in school, or let's say college. Or graduate school, and there's like this one person in the class who gets everything, and it's almost like they're having a private conversation with the teacher on like things that you just don't understand. You're not getting it, and they're just like going back and forth at an incredibly high level. That was Rav. Right? We'll talk about Rav when we get to him, but Rav Yochanan observed this, and he was incredulous that you would call Rav, even depending on your interpretation, whether this appellation of Abba Arika was positive or not. He apparently didn't think it was enough of an honorific for this great man. So, Tracy, take us off. This is Gemara Brachot 5b. This is a little bit longer than most because, even though like only the first paragraph was what I thought about doing, but I figured since the Gemara continues with some stories about Rav Yochanan, it made sense to throw it in here. So, start us off. Gemara Brachot 5b.
Rav Yochanan says, "Leprosy and the lack of children are not chastisements of love. But is leprosy not a chastisement of love? Is it not taught? If a man has one of these four symptoms of leprosy, it is nothing else but an altar of atonement. They are an altar of atonement, but they are not chastisements of love. If you like, I can say, this, the teaching of the Braita, in Babel, and that, the saying of Rav Yochanan, is for there. In Palestine."
Right. So here, at least, you have an indication of Rav Yochanan as, you know, one of the distinguishers between Babel and Eretz Yisrael traditions. Okay. And to explain what's going on here, Rav Yochanan said, "Leprosy and the lack of children, nigaim uvanim enam yisurim shel ahava, are not chastisements of love or punishments of love." Huge, huge discussion in the Gemara in terms of what that means. That we're, you know, if you really want to get into that, come back next time I re-give the evil shear. But at any rate, you know, there seems to be conflicting statements. So one way it resolves it is, well, one's a Babylonian tradition, the other's an Eretz Yisrael tradition. All right.
If you like, I can say, this, the teaching of the Braita, refers to hidden leprosy, and that, what Rav Yochanan said, refers to a case of visible leprosy.
So it's two ways that the Gemara can reconcile conflicting traditions. All right, go ahead.
"But is the lack of children not a chastisement of love? How is this to be understood? Shall I say that he had children and they died? Did not Rav Yochanan himself say, this is the bone of my tenth son? Rather, say then that the former saying refers to one who never had children, and the latter to one who had children and lost them."
Yeah, so there's a line here that appears every now and again of Rav Yochanan, who had 10 sons that died,
and
he carried with him the bone of the 10th one. As you know,
creepy.
Some what?
Creepy.
You could say that. Shimon, take the next paragraph.
Bar Abba fell ill, and Rav Yochanan went in to visit him. He said to him, "Are you suffering? Are your sufferings welcome to you?" He replied, "Neither they nor their reward." He said to him, "Give me your hand." He gave him his hand, and he raised him.
Continue the next paragraph, because these two go together.
Rav Yochanan once fell ill, and Rav
Hanina
went in to visit him. He said to him, Are your sufferings welcome to you? He replied, Neither they nor their Lord. He said to him, Give me your hand. He gave him his hand, and he raised him. Why could not Rav Yochanan raise himself? They replied, The prisoner cannot free himself from jail.
Yeah. It's from his own jail. It's in Chavush Matir Atzmo Mi Beit HaAsurim. One of my favorite quotes in the Gemara, where someone was sick, Rav Yochanan asked him, are they welcome to you? Meaning, are you embracing the suffering? Because one way you could address, context in the Gemara deals a little bit with the Odyssey and how do you deal with suffering. So if bad things happen to you, some people take bad stuff better than other people. Some people deal with illnesses better than others. Some will say this illness will be an atonement for one thing or another, and for others, it just isn't working. So Rav Chiya bar Abba answers, like, are you welcome? He says, nope, neither the sicknesses nor the reward. So Rav Yochanan took his hand and raised him up, and he healed him. And then Rav Yochanan fell ill, and Rav Hanina then went and had the same similar dialogue. So one thing you can note here is that neither Rav Chiya bar Abba nor Rav Yochanan were so firm to say, I embrace every bit of suffering that I have. Right? And the conclusion, the question that the Gemara asks is, why doesn't Rav Yochanan pray for himself? Meaning, if Rav Yochanan can pray for someone else and heal him, certainly he's righteous enough that he should be able to pray for himself. And the Gemara's answer of, in Chavush Matir Atzmo Bi Beit HaAsurim, you can't free yourself from prison, is really a phenomenal line that I know Dr. Pelkovitz, a psychologist in the Jewish community, uses frequently. And anyone tries to do self, it's always easier to help someone else than it is to help your own.
Sure.
Right? Because for any number of reasons, like if you're stuck in negative thinking, you can't break yourself out of it. Someone else can come in and help you with relative ease, but just as like someone can go and help you out, that person might not be able to help themselves out. In another colloquialism, it's, the cobbler's children go barefoot, right? It's a lot easier to provide for others than it's to provide yourself, and sometimes you just can't. There's a lot of tension between what you can do for others and what can you do for yourself. So in many respects, this is a really wonderful Gemara. Yeah.
Also, can you take 1/60th? You can take 1/60th of a person's like sickness, yeah. If you were
every time you do Bikur Cholim, you take 1/60th of their illness. It's a separate Gemara.
What's Bikur Cholim? Is that
visiting the ill?
But isn't there a meditation you do? I remember I thought I had somewhere. It's like a
meditation you do for people to get
like when you grab their right hand. Wait, I don't remember. But there's some you. I guess you just meditate to take 1/60th of their pain or whatever it is that it is.
It's from based on the Gemara to which you're referring. My understanding is that it's automatic just by visiting them.
Okay.
But I would also add that you have to be extremely careful with certain meditative or recitation type things for the purposes of healing, because that might come under the category of lochesh al hamaka, of whispering verses over a wound, which, according to Gemara, or at least the Rambam, would cause you to lose olam haba.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, the point being is, when you do things for healing, there's a difference between prayer and magical incantations. Where prayer, God can still say no. When you do something by way of a mystical incantation, the implication is you can control the spiritual world. And control God does stuff. But that's a huge, huge off-topic issue.
Nice.
That's
one more thing. And also, when you visit the sick, the Shekhinah is on the sick, right? So you're supposed to be at the same level or something?
Oh, that's also a whole other separate question of where the... I've got a whole shiur just on where the Shekhinah is. Yeah, there's a huge machloket and like just...
Oh, that one I think I got...
Well, I don't want to say like machloket as much as... You have a lot of different gemaras that talk about where the Shekhinah is. So we'll have to put that on hold for right now.
Oh, right. Right? I'm just trying to think. It's popping in my head from where I remember.
Yeah.
The pasuk that you really like, the in chavush matir atzmo mi beit
ha'asurim. Not a pasuk, just a rabbinic phrase. Yeah.
So you said that was more about a jail like of his own doing. Is that at all like possibly a reference back to the first paragraph about like is leprosy your own doing kind of thing?
Interesting. In which case it would you could read it in that's why you need, say, the Kohen to help you get rid of it. Possibly. I don't think it's necessary to see that because it seems to be a new discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly don't think that it's impossible. Yeah, to read one to the next.
I mean, there would just be one, like, I don't know. I don't necessarily see the connection between the two stories, but that could be one.
Other than you're dealing with Rav Yochanan and sickness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So then you have Rav Elazar fell ill, and Rav Yochanan went in to visit him. He noticed that he was lying in a dark room, and he bared his arm, and light radiated from it. Thereupon, he noticed Rav Elazar was weeping. Well, first off, that's really convenient if you run out of batteries. Thereupon, he noticed Rav Elazar was weeping, and he said to him, "Why do you weep?" "It is because you did not study enough Torah. Surely we learned. Though the ones who sacrifices much, the one who sacrifices little, have the same merit, provided their heart is directed to heaven." Given, incidentally, what Rav Yochanan himself sacrificed to learn Torah, it's a pretty interesting statement for him to make. Is it perhaps lack of sustenance? Not everyone has the privilege to enjoy two tables. Again, two tables meaning Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, this world and the world to come. Again, fascinating that Rav Yochanan would use this idiom, given, again, if you're taking the Gemara that we saw earlier from Ta'anit 21a, that he gave up earning a living to live in poverty to learn Torah. Also, I should point out here that, as a minor digression, my father's Rabbi Chacham Fa'ur once explained the idiom of Lo kol adam zochel l'shtei shulchanot. A person doesn't always merit to have two tables. He said it doesn't mean one table with two sides, in reference to trying to earn a living off of, you know, learning or teaching Torah. That they're really two tables. My father's teacher, Chacham Yosef Fa'ur. Yosef Fa'ur, if you've looked at in the Hebrew writings. Anyway, is it perhaps because of the lack of children? This is the bone of my tenth son. See, he pulls it up from time to time. Right? So, what he's trying to understand, like, why is Rav Elazar, you know, crying? It's like, well, could it be this? Could it be that? Could it be that? And he's giving explanations that sort of recall his own life. Right, so he replies, "I'm weeping on account of the beauty that is going to rot in the earth." He said to him, "On account that you surely have a reason to, on that account, you surely have a reason to weep." And they both wept. In the meantime, he said to him, "Are your sufferings welcome to you?" He replied, "Neither they nor their reward." He said to him, "Give me your hand." And he gave him his hand and he raised him. Not unlike the other sources, only just a little bit more explanation here.
So we're back to the beauty thing.
Yeah, you throw in the beauty, and that's like, yeah, you know what?
Rabbi.
Well, not just a good-looking rabbi. So, like, you know what? You know, yeah, I'm sad because the beauty's going to go away. It's like, yeah, okay, I hear that one. You know,
yeah, he's right.
Yeah, and it's a fascinating, you know, and this is one reason why it's important to do these cross references, because without the previous Gemaras, you know, I shouldn't say without the previous Gemaras. Knowing the previous Gemaras that we saw about Rav Yochanan's beauty and Rav Yochanan's, you know, sacrifices and income for Gemara and Ta'anit puts this Gemara and Brachot in a whole different context. Right, which is, you know, good reason why it's worthy to be included here. So this gives us a little bit about, you know, some of the background about Rav Yochanan and his personality, and we'll continue with him next week. Have a great week.